I'm Gab. He's Jules. Blue skies over West London, although not so much Chelsea. Of course, they were knocked out despite winning against Real Madrid in the Bernabeu. Bayern Munich also out of the Champions League. How about this for Champions League week? Yeah. Liverpool making it, even getting a slight, not quite a scare at the end, but conceding more than they would have liked. But, Jules, we have to start with what we saw at the Wanda Metropolitano.
Yeah.
Atletico Madrid against City. I said last week that obviously I know which kind of football I prefer. I know which kind of football yields results in the long run. It's not Diego Simeone's, in my opinion. But over those 180 minutes, his approach in that second half, in those last 20, 25 minutes when he sent on the cavalry and he was creating chances and Ederson was making that save.
Which one? What chances? Well, the Correa one in the 12th minute of added time at the end of the game?
No, I'm talking about the...
Which one?
I don't have the exact times in my head.
Okay, I'll give you the time. Okay. Go on. The Cunha one, that Stones...
I have the Rodrigo De Paul one, which he sends wide. I had the Stones one where the ball can go just about anywhere when Stones throws himself in the way. I have the Ederson one where Ederson injured or pretended to injure, I don't know, his shoulder. I mean, there were at least four or five chances. And look,
you know the expected goals.
Listen. Okay. You don't tell me about expected goals. But I love my expected
that
goals.
You're happy with a team that plays 15 minutes over 180 minutes.
No.
You said this is the right approach.
I'm not saying it's the correct approach. It's an approach that worked for Diego Simeone. I take your point about the expected goals, right? And you can turn it around and say, well, City should have converted more chances. To which Pep Guardiola said, well, we would have wanted to, but they made it really, really difficult for us. And I think that's also true. They said, we're simply going to defend and destroy. And then towards the end of games, they tried it in the first leg when they sent with a triple substitution. Didn't quite work. We're going to try and go for it. And we're going to use the environment and the crowd and whatever else. And I think on that night, and Pep Guardiola said this as well. He said, you know, we deserve to go through over the 180 minutes, and I think they completely deserve to go through. But equally, we were quite fortunate that thing worked out the way they did, because those were scary moments at the end. And if you're Atletico Madrid and you're playing Manchester City, one of the two best teams in the world, I mean, every day of the week you'd want to be in that situation where you've got them in the back foot, you're pushing, you're desperate, and you still have a chance to take the game into extra time.
So you see the glass of elimination half full. I see it completely half empty. Why don't you play more? Why don't you play more football instead of just the last 20 minutes and have played so defensively for 160 minutes? I just don't understand. The last 20 minutes showed that if Atleti wanted, with the players that they have, it could be such a different team. And yeah, maybe they would have lost 4-1 the first leg and won't have 3-2 the second leg and still be out. Okay, but at least you would have tried. Now you're out and you said, we did okay because there was those 15 minutes at the end. That's not enough. That's not enough. And you know why I'm happy? I'm happy that they got done at their own game. Because City, in the last half hour, played like Atleti used to. They rolled on the floor. They wasted time. They were clever in the way they defended. They defended well. Yes, there's a few chances, half chances. I mean, 0.7 expected goals at home in a game like that. I don't call that, you know, super scary moments. And I think this is a game that City maybe would have lost 2 years ago. And I think it shows how long they've come defensively in terms of collective strength defensively, the way they played defensively with the ball in the first half, without the ball in the second half. Yeah, they were under pressure. Yeah, I think at times they still panicked a little bit. But Fernandinho, I thought, did well when he came on. I thought losing Walker was the big one because he was the best defender on the night until the injury. But I'm still miffed by the way Atleti played in the whole two games, I have to say.
First of all, I completely agree with you on the City mental toughness. People have said City are soft in the past, right? Mm-hmm. People have said that about Pep's teams. Oh, they're too pretty, you know. If you look at City and you say, you know, who's a thug there? Who would you want? Which City players would you want on your side in a dark alley when you're getting jumped, right?
Yeah.
And frankly, for me, Ruben Dias, definitely.
Fernandinho.
Kyle Walker looks like he'd be pretty mean. Walker is like, yeah.
Oh, I know, Walker, yeah.
Yeah, Kyle Walker could take care of himself.
Yeah.
But honestly, I can't, I mean, like, yeah, Rodri's tall. Yeah, yeah. Big deal,
Fernandinho,
right?
No, Fernandinho, I think,
right.
You know.
Okay, but Fernandinho's also like grandpa, right?
Yeah.
So they showed that they are really, really tough. And they showed that they could get through that scary moment. Remember City's legacy. Remember all the story. Oh, City bottling it, Pep bottling it,
yeah.
Overthinking, blah,
That's
blah, blah.
What I mean.
This, all of this would have come back out. And to do it in that cauldron, I think we have to praise Manchester City for that.
Completely.
I'm just fascinated by Diego Simeone's approach in this return leg, right? So he knew they had to score. They're 1-0 down from the first leg. To me, the plan was very, very simple. Keep it tight, wait, maybe tire them out, take something on the counter if it's there, which is why he set up with this television additive 5-4-1 formation. The only thing that made it marginally more attractive than the first leg was the fact that, you know, you had three attacking players, if you want to call Lamar and Griezmann players. Although it's a philosophical question. If I tell Griezmann, who is an attacking player, to play as an auxiliary fullback, is he still an attacking player?
He's not anymore, trust me.
And I have João Félix up there, this poor little guy. He looked even younger than he is. He's about 13, And he's getting batted about. And then obviously at the other end, you know, the big boy is getting physical from the beginning. And they said, okay, City, you have the ball. We'll defend deep. You said something off the break that it looked as if City at some point were close to 70% possession, I think, in the first half. If it looked as if City were saying, all right, we do not want to give up a goal and inflame the Bernabeu. We're going to keep the ball. We're going to be smart with it. The one, the Metropolitano. Mm. And Roma's going to defend with possession.
Yeah, I think the idea, certainly for the first half, was to defend with the ball. Which is harder, I think, to do than it sounds like. Because you say, oh, yeah, of course, you keep the ball. But you can't keep the ball in a game like that for more than 70%, I think, away from home. So they tried as much as they could to just defend with having the ball. In that sense, I mean...
That's why maybe they created less than you would have expected them to.
So, for example, where you would maybe at times find the verticality and want De Bruyne in transitions quickly forward, in that time... Maybe you find the extra pass, which Pep loves. He always talks about this extra pass, especially in those circumstances and those conditions. And if you want, you use Walker as a third centre-back. So you forget about Walker almost as a right-back. He's purely there when you have the ball as your third centre-back. So if ever you lose the ball somewhere on the pitch, wherever that is, you know that... Yeah. The Stones, Laporte and Walker are there in place. And then good luck for whoever wants to run in behind or take them on, you know, 3v3 or 1-1-1. And that first half worked perfectly. They could have scored with the post. And I think this is a chance they should have taken. And there was a few others where... But I don't think the idea was to go and score. I mean, of course, if you can score, you're going to score.
Right.
It's crazy.
But not so much
with the ball.
I agree with you. I thought that was an interesting approach. I mean, further evidence of that, if you look at Bernardo Silva's starting position...
Mm-hmm.
Bernardo Silva, I think we're obviously a phenomenal footballer, but he's essentially another passer, right? So you have Bernardo Silva and Gundogan and De Bruyne and Rodri and João Cancelo, who when he steps into midfield, he can play make. That seemed to be the idea. And I've had Pep talk about this, but when you are doing what you're talking about, defending with the ball, it's extremely physically tiring for the other team. What I do wonder about is we're in the era of the five substitutions, though. And I wonder to what degree Diego Simeone figured, okay, fine, you want to do that? Let's do that. And then I'm going to meet you in the second half. And then we'll see where it goes.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe.
We're not going to score. You're not going to score. And then I'm going to throw on the fresh legs. And then we're going to see what happens. And in the meantime, you know, I'll introduce a bit of edge into the game, as we saw from Phil Foden's head.
Yeah. Maybe. I thought it was interesting as well, and we saw that against Liverpool on Sunday, and we mentioned it on the show on Monday, and I think we saw it again. Certainly the two big chances in the first half come from those long balls in behind from City towards Walker and Cancelo, which is something they never used to do. The idea was always to find a 2v1 somewhere in different areas of the pitch for City to attack. Now, Laporte or Stones don't hesitate to play long towards Cancelo in behind or towards Walker, like we saw in behind with Alexander-Arnold and Robertson against the games in Liverpool. And I think we would see that again on Saturday in the FA Cup semi-final. And this is something that instead sometimes of just playing between the line, because there's a risk, as we saw, for example, on the Bayern goal against Villarreal, where if you try to play forwards from your midfield between the line, there's a risk that the ball gets intercepted and then the other team is on the attack. If you play long like that, if you lose it,
Guys are still all in
position. Because let's not forget, especially in the game on Wednesday night, what Pep was the most scared is what Atleti would do straight after recovering the ball. So what City worked hard on was, okay, we might lose the ball at some point. We're going to make sure that they don't use it. They can't use it.
And that's a great change, because often when City lose the ball, you have them counter-pressing immediately, high up the pitch, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not to the degree that some other teams do it, but you see that a lot, right?
Yeah.
Here, it was almost as if, okay, if we lose the ball, our first sense is to regain our shape to make sure you can't do anything with it.
Exactly.
And again, you know, people say Pep overthinks, people stereotype Pep. I thought that was pretty mature from Pep.
That
was correct. That was maybe in some ways Pep going against the stereotype of Pep. But then again, Pep's been going against the stereotype of Pep for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It's just that some Muppets haven't noticed.
But to go back to your point about them being under pressure, if you look at it, once Skywalker gets that injury, after that, it's far more difficult for them to defend the way they would have liked to defend. And that's when Atleti have that spell where they create half chances where they are the most threatening. I think if Walker is fit and stays on the pitch until the end, I'm not sure the end of the game is the way it was on Wednesday night. I think City could even better with the threat going forward from Atleti.
I think one thing we haven't mentioned is that this game for City came sandwiched in between the two Liverpool games, whereas Atleti at the weekend, obviously they played Mallorca, they lost. They rested players. Their heads weren't really in it. I think that also impacts. You know, there is a human side. Mental side of it.
Nine players started on Wednesday who started on Sunday for City. It's huge. After the intensity of Sunday against Liverpool, to have nine of them players still start in a game with as much intensity but in a different way, less running, but the mental intensity and all of that, it's huge. It's crazy.
I thought... I'll talk about substitutions.
Okay.
But I thought those were the right substitutions that he made. Bringing on Carrasco
to force
the one-on-ones against higher legs. Bringing on Cunha, where you know you had more of a chance to hold things up.
Yeah, and Correa as well.
And Correa, sneaky. And then eight minutes from time, you know, you bring on Luis Suarez as well, just to ratchet it up further.
But you know what I don't understand from the Atleti point of view? And I know this is the mentality that El Cholo transmits to the team, to the dressing room. But you've got the upper hand. We're in the last 10 minutes. You are putting them under pressure. And then Felipe goes and does what he did on Foden, which breaks the momentum that you had as an Atletico side, breaks the rhythm that you had. They were there, not for the taking City, but they were clearly under pressure.
So,
and then that stops all that momentum, and then you go into a fight, and you go into this crazy five, 7 minutes. But just think, okay, Felipe gets the ball. If you don't kick Foden,
I think you make a great point there, because logic suggests, dudes, you guys are the ones who need to score.
Yeah,
keep the pressure up, get the ball back and play quickly. If anything, it was City, and I think there was some time wasting, quite evidently from City going on as well.
Yeah,
understandably,
of course.
I'm not 100% on the Felipe one. I've seen this again. Felipe goes to win the ball from Foden,
and
right?
He does,
and he wins the ball. Yep. That's not the foul.
No.
I'm watching. I watched that bit actually on his television. Heard Glenn Hoddle say, "Oh look, he kicks out of him as he's getting up." I don't think he kicks out at Foden at all.
He swings his leg. To be fair. It looks like,
but he's
looks
sliding
like
he's... and he's getting back up. He's not going to do any damage. If Foden was hurt, and I say if judiciously, he hurt himself because of the sloppy way he came back down. He didn't land properly, right? I mean, that was pretty obvious.
Yeah,
that's not down to. I think the reason Felipe lost it there. I mean, there were two things going on. One is obviously the referee decided to show yellow, which I'm not sure was warranted. At all. And at that point,
because he looks like he swings his leg. We had Johan Drouet, the former Arsenal defender and Swiss international, on French TV, and he said, "Trust me, I've done those tackles and I've followed through like that and I've swung my leg. I know exactly what Felipe was trying to do."
Okay.
And maybe,
you know what, if that's the case, I haven't played at Johan Drouet's level.
No,
I'll say this. If this is the case, then I think you need to praise the referee for that. People always talk about referees, they don't understand the perspective of footballers, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
So that part, fine. Afterwards, Phil Foden, however hurt he was, he makes sure that he rolls,
yeah.
Which, again...
And he rolls back on the pitch.
And he rolls back on the pitch. And, like, this is... all these distinctions about, you know, it's a foreign thing, blah, 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 I think in modern football... These differences have waned, right?
Yeah, completely.
Foden knows what he's doing. He says, what is the worst thing that can happen if I take an extra roll onto the pitch? Nothing, right? Maybe I'll get booked. That's the worst possible thing that can happen to me, but we're going to waste more time.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get up on my high horse because Atletico Madrid does the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Most teams in that situation would do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Equally, Savage coming over.
I think that's the thing. I wonder even if Felipe gets sent off, if Savage doesn't start the brawl.
100%. I'm not sure Felipe gets booked.
Yeah, I agree.
If Savage doesn't
do that. I agree
with you. And Savage is going over, and he's telling him to get up, and he's telling him to get off the pitch,
yeah.
Right?
Well, he's trying to carry him.
Obviously, Savage goes and manhandles him like a psychopath, frankly, right? And that is, I think, what inflames
completely.
The whole situation further.
Completely.
There is a school of thought that says, well, they know that they're going to add 1 billion minutes of extra time, so it's okay because you get the psychological edge. You get in, you get the phones in. I don't buy that at all.
Me neither.
I don't buy that at all.
Me neither.
You had the pressure. This gave everybody at the back for City a breather. This allowed them to regroup.
Yeah.
And
to get even more resilient, more together, on like, you know, they would have seen the Savage trying to help Sterling, Savage pulling the hair of Grealish, who, you know, did call him a see you next Tuesday just before. But I mean, and I think if you're City, once the play resumed, you go like, okay, now show them how resilient we are, how tough we can be as well, which I think Atleti thought, okay, now we're in their minds, we're gonna go and walk over them, but they didn't.
I don't know if they ever thought they were going to walk into them. I think they always viewed themselves as underdogs or long shots.
No, but like for the last 10 minutes, because they thought they had that edge even at 10 men against 11.
Is it fair to say that right now in world football, because, you know, marketing people and coaches, when things aren't doing well, they always talk about, oh, we need to have a strong identity. We need to regain our identity.
Yeah.
What is our brand identity? The identity is easier to sell. You know, like marketing people love this because it's fuzzy and nonsense. And yeah. That's kind of what most of these people are, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how often do you hear about United DNA, United identity, yeah. This team has no identity, that's why they lose. Yeah, maybe they lose because they play badly, maybe it's because their manager makes mistakes, maybe they lose because, you know, the other team were better, but no, it's because of identity, right? We agree there's no team in the world, I think, that has a stronger identity. Certainly no Champions League team that has a stronger identity than Atletico Madrid. All the components. At home, I noticed Pep also dressed all in black. Do you think that was some psychological stuff? He didn't wear that. You know that stupid...
No, but did you see after the big Felipe Savic incident, then he was continuing to have words with Savic. You could see him on the touchline, right. Shouting towards Savic. I don't know what they were saying, but it didn't look nice. But I think Pep, I think, stood up to the occasion in a way. I really do. But like, it almost is like, you know, his Slim Shady side in him. I was like, you know, I'm not having this, El Cholo. I'm going to go at you as well, like you do with other managers. And
do you think that's why he dressed the way he did?
Maybe he did.
Because, you know, normally we used to see him and was... I'm sorry.
He often wear...
I don't want to make fun of
dark,
Manchester City's... whoever makes Manchester City's apparel. But that hoodie that he wears, the one that says MDCR on the back.
So the Manchester, yeah.
It's the
Manchester.
What is it?
It's one of the new, yeah, it's the
what is that? What does that
clothing
mean,
line.
MDCR? What does it stand for?
So Madchester instead of Manchester.
Manchester, like from like the music in the, in
yeah,
the
90s? Yeah, the scene, I think. Yeah, the vibrant scene, stuff like that.
And this is an official Manchester City, and he likes that.
To represent the city, I think.
But you know, there was a club, not the city. There's another club in the city.
I know, but there was a few people on the train back on Sunday after the game against Liverpool that were wearing the same jumpers and stuff.
I preferred his outfit. I much preferred what he wore when he tried to out Cholo El Cholo, dressing up all in black and being like, you know, I thought that had metaphoric value. From Simeone, though, like,
we disagree on this.
You disagree on his game plan. Do you agree that they executed their game plan well?
But they lost, Gab. They lost. Stop with this. It was the right approach and they did it well. They didn't do it well. They lost. They knocked out.
They lost to a better team with better players and a better manager.
It didn't work. So, what? Yeah, okay, try something.
Okay, so then every time you lose, it's because you have the wrong plan.
No,
okay, I got it.
But you can't tell me this was the right plan when, you know, Tuchel had the right plan and he almost worked out. And in that case, I said, yes, okay, he got it right. But don't tell me El Cholo got it right.
We're going to get to Tuchel in a minute. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough City. Let's talk about the other game in Madrid.
Wow.
I thought this was extraordinary because Chelsea traveled to Real Madrid. They were beaten 3-1 at home. They could have conceded a lot more than that. Thomas Tuchel, like, basically threw his whole team under the bus, threw the whole night under the bus. And they really were that bad. And we praise Real Madrid because, oh, look, they're unflappable. You know, they've got the experience. Yep. It counts, the quality. And then Chelsea go out. And then all of a sudden, they're 3-0 up.
They wipe the floor with them. It's not even being 3-0 up because you can be 3-0 up over, like, three counter-attacks. And
they're not getting close to them.
They just, like, dominate so much. Like, you've rarely seen a team at the Bernabeu, apart from Barcelona in the Clásico, not so long ago. But still, it's like, wow, okay, there's just pretty much nothing is working for Real Madrid. They can't get the ball out the way they want. They can't hit Benzema. Modric is not in a good day. Vinicius is so well defended by Reece James. And suddenly the plan that Klopp put in place and put together, even if Loftus-Cheek was still wondering at times, okay, where am I supposed to stand? Where am I playing? What's my position? Am I like a central midfielder? Am I a right wing? Am I a right wing back? Am I a right winger? Am I the right back? Even that worked. And Kovacic and Conte in midfield, you had obviously the Mount goal. Even Timo Werner, maybe one of the best performances he's had with a Chelsea shirt. And you think, like, wow.
I count them in one hand, but that certainly worked on the night. And were you surprised that Tuchel, because we love to stereotype people, and Tuchel's, you know, for so long, obviously he's moved to the back four in certain situations, but this is a situation where he moved to a back four by choice. You know, because he wanted to give them a different look. He put Loftus-Cheek in there. Were you surprised that all of a sudden he says, I'm going to throw you a curveball here. I'm going to change everything around. And you won't be expecting this.
No, I was expecting him to do something like that. You know, I expected very much, and I said it before the game, some sort of hybrid things, even if they didn't really do hybrid before under Tuchel. But this was very much, you know, depending on possession, if they had the ball or not the ball, a back three or back four. And again, Loftus-Cheek position varies a lot. But I thought this was the only way they could come back in the game. It's almost messed with the Real Madrid's heads and their plans and their preparation on how you defend on Havertz, how you defend on Werner, how you defend on Mount. You know, having Mount almost as a 10 in a free role, and Werner and Havertz, the two strikers, the two centre forwards, having Loftus-Cheek in that position, having Alonso really, really high up the pitch. I thought all of that was great from Tuchel. It really, really, really worked a plan. And he had a great plan in place.
I was told by somebody close to the Real Madrid camp that the turning point for them was actually the Benzema chance where he hit the woodwork.
Mm.
That at that point, I think they were still 2-0 down at that point.
Yeah.
At that point, it felt like they were going to motor on. It felt like they could get back into it. it felt like, okay, Tuchel's going to have to change something. Otherwise, we're going to keep creating chances similar to this one.
But is that after the I thought the Marcos Alonso was the big turning point. I think if the goal is,
I think everybody,
if the goal
yeah, stands, I think you have to put the two together.
It's over.
All right. Can we, everybody seems to have an opinion on this. To me, based on the laws of the game, the way they're written, yeah, the referee has no choice but to disallow that goal.
Because it's scored straight after, right?
Because it comes immediately afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in agreement, right?
We are. I thought first, and I have to say, I didn't really remember the rule. I thought that if it deflected off your thigh, for example,
yeah,
like it is in that case, and then hit your arm or your hand, that the referee would not give that one.
So the off the fly, off the thigh, off another part of the body, that was a metric that was used to judge when a handball was intentional or not,
okay,
right? The idea that you don't have that kind of control. Mm. But anything that touches your body in that situation and then leads directly to a goal.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So, it was the right call. As harsh as it was for Chelsea and the momentum of the game at that time. But for me, that's the turning point. And then, of course, the Benzema header gives them belief that something special can happen. And then I think Carlos' substitutions with Camavinga, who had a really good cameo again, and Rodrigo made a difference.
Yeah, we're going to get more onto the substitutions, but I think there's two other things we're going to touch upon. One is obviously the whole legend of the great Bernabeu comeback. And in the end, it's weird. We talk of a comeback, right? This is a game they actually lost.
Yeah.
But because also the away goals rule, this really does feel like, you know, we're playing four quarters of football here, which I thought was interesting. And then obviously Luka Modric. You're the techers guy. It was a great finish from Rodrigo.
It hits his calf.
No, it was a great finish. It wasn't a clean finish. I said it was a great finish. I think for him to make the run and put his body in a way to make contact.
Yeah, okay.
In that sense, I give you. Because the rest, it wouldn't occur to a normal player to make that run.
Well, that's why you should. That's the run you should make in that position.
Well, but you don't expect to get the ball.
No, but you still make the run.
Okay, brave Modric, outside of the foot, go on.
It's just crazy. It's not so much, we've seen him doing outside of the foot before, scoring at the Euros with Croatia against Scotland, at training.
Yeah.
Real Madrid have 100 video. But it's the trajectory of the ball and the millimeter that he lands literally on Rodrigo, leg or calf or foot, whatever you want to call it, between two defenders. It's just super special.
I want to take it back 1 second to Thomas Tuchel. Something happened after the game, and this received a lot of attention, maybe unfairly so. I can get it. Like, Thomas Tuchel's season is pretty much over, right? Except for the FA Cup.
Yeah.
But I know the FA Cup's a big deal, but it's not a big deal when you won the Champions League last year.
Yeah.
Right? So I can understand the emotional side of it. He got very annoyed that the referee was laughing and joking with Carlo Ancelotti after the game.
Yeah.
I guess he argued it was unseemly and whatever. What's your take?
I prefer that kind of frustration than the frustration we saw at the Wanda, where it all kicks off in the tunnel and your players, you know, I thought Chelsea lost in a very gracious way, in a way, because they could have been really frustrated because they were the better team. I think over the two legs, they deserved to go through. And I think you could have easily, they could have bowled that with frustration and everything, and they could have lost it. So
you thought Chelsea were the better team over the two legs.
So if you take the whole, I thought the first 45 minutes were Real Madrid 100%, and that's the best 45 minutes we've seen from Real this season. The second half at Stamford Bridge, I thought Chelsea were the better team, and if Lukaku scored a header, and they created far more chances, and then at the Bernabeu, it was all Chelsea from start to finish, pretty much.
Yeah, I don't agree so much in the second half, but in the first leg.
After the Benzema third goal, there's nothing.
They could have conceded six goals at that point.
Okay, but it's only three, and then that the rest of the second half. So the next 35 minutes,
you had two Lukaku headers, but
at the end there's also the Rudiger header, there's the Havertz header, there's even in the first leg there's a few things. I think when Tuchel said we deserve to go through, I understand what he means.
Right.
I really do. I mean, as much as I love Karim Benzema and Carlo Ancelotti, and I think this Real Madrid have something very special in this competition, for the rest, so I can understand, I would have gone mad if I had been on the pitch and I'd been a Chelsea player, and I thought they got knocked out in a very gracious way. But I was expecting the Tuchel dig at the ref because you saw how mad he was on the touchline in that second half, especially after the Alonso goal. I think he wanted the ref to go and see the screen for the Alonso goal, but that would not, he didn't need to. It was so clear that the VAR ref said, yeah, it's a handball, just rule out the goal. There's no need for you to go and see anything.
Yeah, I think, again, people don't seem to be familiar with the laws of the game. So there's no question that there's no temporal lapse between the ball hitting Alonso and him shooting on goal, right? Once you establish that, the only thing you need to establish is, does the ball hit his hand in any way, shape, or form whatsoever? That's it. If you don't like these laws of the game, that's fine. Go ahead and have a debate there. But
there's no ground there for Tuchel to moan or to complain.
Unless Tuchel thinks the ball didn't hit Alonso. And to be fair, from the touchline, he's not going to know if the ball hits him or not, right?
But
the end of the game, I'm assuming some servant would have said, yeah, Tommy, it hit his hand.
Yeah.
And that's it.
But the thing about the referee, just to finish on that, on your question and the point, Tuchel can have a laugh with the referee as well. I don't know, maybe Carlo and
Tuchel's German.
The Polish referee, I don't know, maybe
Marciniak.
Maybe he's refereed Carlo 1,000 times before. You know, I don't know, maybe. So what? It's not because they know each other and they have a laugh that the guy is going to advantage Real Madrid and Carlo Ancelotti. And you can do similar things. And maybe in 10 years' time, when he's going to be not as old as Carlo, but not far, he will have the same relationship with someone. And the opposition manager is going to say, oh, I didn't like Tuchel having a laugh and a chat with the referee.
I think you don't. It's not necessarily like I think this whole thing about demeanor and whatever. I mean, you get both things, right? You often see referees trying to be smiley before games and shaking hands and nodding at players because they want to just referee their game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'd have more if you wanted to bring up specific things that referees got wrong in the game and you think hurt your team. That's one thing. I don't know that it applied in this. Like, you could bring up the fact that some people thought that the Rudiger goal came, from a...
He shoved a little bit, Modric?
No. The corner was no corner.
Yeah,
it was a corner, not a corner. So there are other things. I was curious about one thing because just tying it back to the Man City game. Tactical fouling is a part of teams that press high up the pitch.
Yeah.
Right? It's not... People have talked about, Pep Guardiola, Fernandinho, any team that does that, there was one situation where on the Benzema goal, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, I was really struck by this because he has a chance to foul and stop the play. And he doesn't. I don't think he was booked at the time. Whereas we've seen other players, sacrifice bookings.
Yeah, we saw Valverde on Kovacic in the first half.
Exactly. I'm wondering if that is not Loftus-Cheek being naive because he's not a kid anymore.
No, yeah.
But I think it's maybe him not being in the rhythm of certain games because he's played very little.
Yeah, maybe. And I think this is something you learn as well. This is something that you get aware of more and more through your career, depending on your manager, depending on your style of football, depending on a lot of things that maybe some are born with it and they're so cynical that they know exactly what to do, but others I think have to learn it. And you know that this Chelsea squad and this Chelsea team, having gone through what they've gone through at the Bernabeu, not many people, again, we go back to that point, but not many people go to the Bernabeu and are 3-0 up. This is not, there was the Clásico and it happens sometimes, but it's really rare. And I think they will all learn from Tuchel to Mendy, to Havertz, to even the most experienced of those players, Thiago Silva, we learn so much from that win/defeat.
From Real Madrid's perspective, we've praised the fact that, experience. I did this last week on the show, right?
Yeah.
I said, I don't like bringing up experience and mental strength because it's not something I can quantify, but I have to attribute it to that. But then I get this game where with all their experience, all their mental strength and their personality and all this stuff, they're 3-0 down at home.
Yeah.
So then I ask, was I wrong last week? Does this experience, mental strength, is this actually all nonsense?
No, because they scored the Rodrigo goal that take them to extra time.
But that was after the substitutions.
I know, but still, I think the first goal they got done, where it's an amazing move by Chelsea to wait for the ball and pass it around and then hit the verticality and the positioning of Loftus-Cheek and then Werner to mount. The second goal is a set piece. And then the third goal, I still don't know what Casemiro is surfing on the pitch. He's like...
sliding but to wait, go on holidays.
But that's my point, right? Because that's Casemiro, the experienced guy, the winner, the mental strength.
You can still make a mistake. Yeah, because he happens to make a mistake thinking that Werner is going to hit it first time, and he doesn't.
Let's talk about Carlo's changes. Because I thought he absolutely nailed them. I thought Camavinga had a massive impact on the game. The one at the end where I think Nacho wasn't fit for most of the second half. And in the end, you know, seeing Carvajal at center half, he did make the point afterwards when he was talking, and he said, you know, playing against this team, at that point, we become a very, very small team. In fact, Kroos was out. I think in terms of...
Who was not happy, by the way, to come off. We read on your lips, Tony.
We heard what you said. But I'm just thinking, like, in terms of set pieces, on the one hand, and again, I may not nail down everybody was on the pitch, but if you're defending a set piece, you're defending a set piece essentially with Benzema, Camavinga, and then I think your next best header of the ball at that stage is David Alaba, who's, what, 1 meter 80.
You can also have Courtois coming up, but we know this is not his forte.
On the other end, you know, you've got Havertz, you've got Alonso, who's a phenomenal header of the ball. You've Thiago got Silva, both center backs. You've got Loftus-Cheek on the pitch. He's a big boy, right?
And the Chelsea chances at the end come from set pieces. The Havertz header on the second phase, and then, of course, the Jorginho one. I mean, I don't want to pick on Jorginho. We both like him. know him well. This is a season to forget. Between the two penalties that he missed for Italy and that big chance, it is a big chance. Even on his left foot, I do not care. This is a huge chance. And to not even hit it on target, don't get me started.
All right, let's throw this forward. Because at this point, we have most people, and I think we agree on this, have Liverpool and City as the two best teams in the world. Those are two clear favorites. You know, Augie the other day, well, it's going to be a Liverpool City final. And yeah, if you believe in chalk, that's what happened. I've made the point, don't sleep on Real Madrid because sometimes in knockout games, experience matters.
And you've also said it. You've said you need outstanding individuals. You said in the group stages they could go far, and you were right.
Outstanding, you know, one of the very best goalkeepers in the tournament, if not the best, you can debate. Luka Modric, who can pop up and do the ridiculous in midfield. David Alaba, who I think has been, at least in the Champions League, has generally played really, really well. And up front,
Kareem the Dream.
There you go. The only reason I had this segment was so you could go through that. Obviously, they're still in the mix. And I just wonder, though, and I'm so looking forward to the semifinal because I really want to see what do you pull out of the hat.
But this Real Madrid team is more suited for Pep Guardiola and City, right? Than Atletico, for example. Pep hates those kind of teams. But with Real, even if they play on the counter, even if they play with a lower block or a medium block, this game should suit City.
Yeah. And I'll say this too, if Real Madrid get to the final, talk about earning your place. I mean, Paris Saint-Germain, Chelsea, Man City, if they get to the final, of course.
How many players do you think Chelsea need to compete with City and Liverpool next season? What would you change? There's a lot to change, right, in that squad, or there's not so much to change?
So I think if Ben Chilwell comes back, I think you're fine in the wide areas, presumably you're going to play back three. It depends on who extends, who doesn't extend. I'd like to see more of Chalaba next season.
Do you think he's good enough?
I think to be part of that rotation, but I think you need, at a minimum, I think Rudiger's probably going to... If Rudiger doesn't stay, you need two centre backs. I don't think there's any question there. And I think one of them needs to be an outstanding centre back. The other one can be a guy who's not going to embarrass you.
Okay.
Midfield, I think, is the big one. None of those guys are getting any younger. I don't know, and I think that's where you have to make a big call. I don't know how productive Conte is going to continue to be going forward.
It's difficult.
His injuries, he's getting older.
You saw in that game, he was excellent for 70 minutes, and then he loses the ball. Even if it's a great interception by Alaba, the way he twists his body for the header, and then there's obviously the Luka Modric moment of magic. But I don't think N'Golo has to play forward at that time of the game when they're 3-0 up. I think he can easily put his foot on the ball, keep it playing sideways, and Chelsea have another phase of possession. But for him to play for, it's not a bad ball. It's just Alaba does great to intercept it. But he clearly dipped in the last 20 minutes of the game. It's Ramadan as well. Plus, as you said, he's 31 years old and had a lot of injuries.
I think you need to think in terms of a central midfielder, whether it, I know there's going to be a lot of people saying, oh, get Declan Rice. I don't know. Maybe it is Declan, maybe somebody else. But you need definitely a midfielder. Up front, I think you're committed to Lukaku. If I was the club, I would go to him and say, like, make Lukaku work.
So you said to Tuchel, okay, change what you haven't changed this season for Lukaku.
Make it work. Make it work. Because you know what? You're not going to be somebody else coming in the door. We're not going to move this guy. We're not going to shift this guy. You knew he was coming. You had a plan for him. You know, he's had injuries. He wasn't on the bench, of course, because he apparently had, like, he's got some injuries. So he didn't travel. Make it work. And then Lukaku, Havertz, Mount. I don't think you need much else. In fact, I'd move some people out because I think you have too many bodies there.
You need a great one-on-one winger or creator. You need someone that
can... You have Pulisic and Ziyech, who are one-on-one wingers, creators.
Ziyech,
and you have Timo Werner, as a one-on-one guy.
Ziyech doesn't dribble past people. Pulisic could. He doesn't do it enough. You need someone like Ousmane Dembele, who on one-on-one is going to make a difference and then create something out of those jewels with the ball. Ziyech is great with the delivery once. But you know what, you need someone like that you don't already have in your squad.
To be honest, all these wingers, dump them all and get Michael Olise. There you go.
I'm good with that. I love that.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Quick Hits is sponsored by Football Manager 22.
On sale now.
All right, enough of that. How about some more quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
A late goal from Samuel Chukwueze allows Villarreal to equalize and knocks Bayern out of the Champions League on aggregate. Jules, the knives are out for my man, Julian. Your namesake, are you going to?
I am.
It's two Jules?
Yes, I am. For a few things. First, I didn't like at all his comments before the game in his press conference saying we're going to punish them, they kept us alive, blah, blah, blah. All that nonsense, all that BS. Like, I didn't really like, to be fair, the way Bayern conducted themselves after that draw, you know, taking the win for granted. I thought Nagelsmann despised Villarreal. I thought he completely underestimated them and Unai Emery. And in a way, I'm glad that he got taught a lesson the way he did. And that he will learn from it, I hope. And tactically as well. He got outsmarted. I'm sorry. It's not because you put five forwards on that you think it's going to easy, we're going to create chances and score goals. Well, no. And if you, on top of that, neglect your defensive transitions, then you got done, like on the goal. Where was Kimmich? Yeah. I mean, where were the defensive midfielders? What was that about bringing on Alphonso Davies for the last 5 minutes? Why? And taking Lucas Hernandez out?
He got killed for the Davies thing. I figure...
In a back three?
Yeah, if you want to send the message, Davies, he's got the recovery speed. I was struck by something else. I thought Lewandowski could have been sent off in the first 20 minutes of that game.
He was very, very angry, yeah.
And I'd love to know mentally, because, you know, Lewandowski, obviously he has an edge, but he's generally very professional and unflappable. Mm-hmm. I thought in that match, I don't know, something happened pregame. They were a little too hyped up going out there.
Or maybe the whole thing about his future, playing
maybe
on his mind.
Maybe it's that. I don't know. Mm.
Villarreal could not resist a bit of a post-match trolling, Gab, by tweeting out the message, "Welcome to UEFA Farmers League." Gab, your thought? I thought that was funny.
So first of all, let's be very clear on this. If you use the term Farmers League for any league, you are a complete putz, okay? Farmers League, not a thing. It's not a word. It's not anything. It's just something that some idiot started using, and I'm glad Villarreal turned it against them.
Yeah.
Anybody who calls, if Farmers League is supposed to mean like inferior league, anybody who uses that on La Liga doesn't understand anything about football and, you know, maybe should be devoting themselves to golf or some worthwhile pursuit like that, okay? So let's just be very, very clear about this. Unai Emery, I have a couple things to say on this one too. The reason, okay, there's people who make fun of Unai Emery because of the goody bidding and stuff like that. Yeah. And obviously making fun of somebody because of his accent or his voice, it's not cool.
No.
The reason other people make fun of Unai Emery is because when he talks, even when he talks in Spanish, he's very difficult to follow. He doesn't really make any sense. He goes around in circles. This
doesn't
is the
finish his sentences.
He leaves things hanging in the air, right? Yeah. But the man is brilliant.
He is.
In this context, maybe he's not the right guy for a big club, whether it's Paris Saint-Germain or Arsenal. Mm-hmm. And by the way, how could you ignore the fact? This is like the North London Rehab Academy, right? Francis Coquelin, fewer than four former Spurs, Aurier, Etienne Capoue, Juan Foyt, and Gio Lo Celso, who starts playing for Emery, all of a sudden is a completely different player. I mean, this is special. Yeah, and by the way, shout out to my man, Moreno as well.
Yeah, and Ando Donnarumma as well, who not so long ago was playing in the Championship, you know.
Fantastic. Liverpool were 3-1 up from the first leg and ended up drawing 3-3 with Benfica. Jules, was Jurgen Klopp playing with fire a little bit when he rested Mane, Van Dijk, Salah, Fabinho, Thiago, Robertson, and Trent Alexander-Arnold?
No, they were 3-1 up. So clearly the starting 11, the choices of the team, that worked. They were 3-1 up. They were cruising. What was funny, I thought, is that
you're
once...
3-1 up, you substitute everybody at halftime because you're 3-1 up?
But no, but once he put Salah and Mane on and Thiago on, that's when they started conceding and not playing as well as they did previous to that when he was the B team. And I just think they took the eye of the ball. They were 6-2 on aggregate when they were 3-1 up, when Firmino scored his second goal. Maybe he would have liked to concede less goals. I don't think he would care. If I'm not happy when I qualified for the Champions League semi-final, punch me or knock me out, he said, or something like that. And he's right, come on.
He's right, we love Klopp, but... if we're going to have a go at Julian Nagelsmann for coming across as a little too arrogant beforehand and giving the opposition bulletin board material, if I'm Benfica and I see all these guys on the bench,
we're
the little sisters of the poor coming to visit Anfield.
You don't.
By the way.
They play City again on Saturday. You know, they play them on Sunday.
I feel a little, I just wonder if that gave Benfica that little bit extra motivation. And by the way, reminder, Liverpool lost their last Champions League home game
against Inter, yeah.
So, I don't know. Look, it worked out. Klopp's fine.
Yeah. And by the way, Darwin Nunes' price has gone up 20 million again after the performance he had against Liverpool. Benfica with 3-1 down, as we just explained, Gab, and then scored twice to make it 3-3. In both cases, the linesman flagged for offside, and in both cases, VAR overruled him. And rightly so as well. Gab, do we need more evidence that VAR is a good thing, at least for offside?
No, we don't. And look, if we want to have the whole macro conversation of VAR, I think it's old and tired. I think people are used to it now.
Yeah.
People make philosophical objections and so on. When it comes to offside, and I don't want to hear this nonsense about the frame, the ball leaving, blah, 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 the foot, all this idiocy. Like, this is a very obvious situation where under normal circumstances, I mean, look, in the end, it didn't matter because the ball went through. But these goals would have been flagged off.
Yeah.
So we should be grateful for that.
Yeah.
All right. Now everybody's reporting that Erik ten Hag to Manchester United is a done deal. Jules, we've talked about this. Do we need to discuss this now or do we take it up when it actually becomes official? Because I'm going
to
be so bored about this slow burn.
True. But the only thing I would say is next season starts now. For every club, whether you're a big club, a small club, whether you'll be in Europe next season or not in Europe next season, your next season starts now. And if you don't know who your manager is, it's not a good start.
No.
At least now they do know. They can put things in place to get the players that he wants, to get rid of the players that he doesn't want. And that's very, very positive.
If it's done, I think at some point they need to make an announcement. Anyway.
Yeah.
Like, you just work it out with, because, you know, Ajax aren't stupid, right? They have internet connections in Amsterdam. I know this for a fact. They said, oh, look, they're saying this is true.
Well,
you know, you said we didn't want to announce it until after to not mess with the Eredivisie race. Okay, right. It's out there now.
Yeah,
you need to address
exactly.
It.
Sticking with United, Gab, the Manchester Evening News reports that Cristiano Ronaldo vetoed Antonio Conte's arrival at the club and that his agent, Jorge Mendes, also asked the club for reassurance that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would be sacked after that defeat, remember, against Watford in November, which he ended up being sacked as well. Gab, what does this mean? What, that the Cristiano Jorge Mendes is pulling the strings?
I think this means a lot, and I think this means a lot in terms of narrative. Look, Cristiano Ronaldo does not have, he's not Russia in the United Nations Security Council. He does not have veto power, right? He may have expressed an opinion, he may not. Equally, Jorge Mendes asking for reassurances. It's plausible that Jorge Mendes rings up the club and says, hey, what's up? What's up with Solskjaer? Y'all going to get rid of him now? You want to talk to my man Lopetegui here? Who knows, right?
Yeah.
He's doing his job.
Yeah.
if Ronaldo's asked his opinion of Conte, Ronaldo's also giving his opinion. I don't see an issue with that. But what's interesting is the Manchester Evening News, which is the local newspaper in Manchester, having this story, putting the story out there. To me, that says 100% the story comes from the club.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this isn't people preparing for maybe Ronald exit.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's interesting.
Granit Xhaka, speaking in the Players Tribune, revealed that his relationship with the fans will never be the same after he was booed last year. Wonderful quote. Poetic.
Yeah.
It's like broken glass. You can piece it together, but the cracks will always be there.
Yeah, I mean, I love what the Players Tribune do. You do as well. It's good to see the players, you know, writing those articles in the first person, you say. Only thing is, Granit Xhaka has also his part of responsibility of why things went toxic between him and the fans. But yeah, go and read it and make your own mind about it. More bad news for Juventus, Napoli and other Italian clubs, Gab. The sporting trial over inflated transfer values is underway. We mentioned it many times on the shows before. And the prosecution wants a 1-year ban for club president Andrea Agnelli and 16 months for former sporting director Fabio Paratici, who is now at Spurs, Aurelio De Laurentiis also, I think, for a 12-month ban or something like that. What's going to happen?
Okay, so without making this too complicated, of course, we talked this about this before. Because of amortization, you can do this trick where you swap one player for another player. You can almost put whatever value you want on him, and then suddenly you've generated instant income on your balance sheet, although it's just paper money, no money changes hands. And that in turn means that you don't have to either load debt onto the club or do a capital injection, do a capital raise, right? Juventus are being investigated on this along with other clubs, including Napoli, as you said. There's two parallel investigations. There is some overlap. So this is purely from a sporting justice perspective. There's a criminal trial as well, which then goes into false accounting and whatnot, which concerns Juve and other clubs too. There are two separate strands. There is some overlap, not complete overlap. As far as the bans are concerned, completely irrelevant. I know, even if they're found guilty.
Yeah.
How do you ban? It's not like Andrea Agnelli plays. What are you banning him from?
Yes,
you
stay at home.
No, I think. No, it's stupid stuff. Like, he's not allowed to go in the dressing room. Like, it's completely stupid. Yeah. We've seen with these bans before. They don't really work. Juventus are going to argue that, I'm sorry, there's no objective measure of how much we should be paying for a player, right? You can't tell us. And one of the reasons I think they're going to get away with it in this trial is, from what I can tell, from what's been reported, the prosecution's arguments are pretty stupid. They have like 5 benchmarks to determine the correct value of a player, and it's based on age. They haven't got a transfer mark yet, but it's based on age, it's based on appearances and so on. That's not how you do it. There could be a guy who's a phenomenal talent, but maybe he needs to lose weight to get really good, or somebody else who maybe has been injured, or, you know, these are all fair. I think Juventus are going to make this argument. I think a strong case. The false accounting trial, which is more serious, that's a criminal trial. Obviously, that's all TBD.
Yeah.
Jesse Marsh has revealed that, in his opinion, Marcelo Bielsa overtrained the Leeds players, and that may be why they picked up so many injuries. Are you buying this, Jules?
So we said before how much we like Jesse Marsh and the job he's doing that he's been doing so far at Leeds. I'm not too keen on this. And I've said it before, I don't like a manager coming in and saying, oh yeah, the players were not fit when I arrived, or they were not this and they were not that, and blaming the former manager for that. I don't think...
It's not a good look.
It's not a good look. I don't think Jesse had to go and after Bielsa, even if he thought so, even if he has proofs of it, I don't know. I don't care, to be fair. Go after and criticise the guy who was there before you. Look, he did a great job to get you into that position in the first place.
I'm slightly torn here because he's doing this while Leeds are doing well, right? So he's not using it as an excuse. I think in his mind, he says, oh, let me answer this question honestly.
Yeah, but then
and then it
twice.
Gets twisted around as an attack on Bielsa. This is not a good look.
No.
Look, I'm sorry, man. Man went to Princeton. He didn't learn anything, right? So, you know, that's
how it is. I guess. The Chelsea sale moves forwards in baby steps as the 4 remaining bidders submit more details of their offers. And Boston Celtics owner Stephen Pagliuca has kept a low profile so far, but he unveiled a high profile set of names in his consortium, Gab. And also, what about his shares in Atalanta?
So they're two separate things, obviously. Every indication is that they're committed to Atalanta as well. They own, I think, 55% of the club.
it becomes an issue if they face each other in European competition. I think they cross that bridge. He doesn't even know if he's going to get Chelsea at this stage, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to be for lawyers. It also means we also don't know if he's going to dilute it. Did he simply put this consortium together and he's going to have a minority stake? There's a lot of stuff that we still don't know.
That can happen, yeah, of course.
But I'm just... Oh, and by the way, another fun Stephen Pagliuca facts. I didn't know this, but both his sons went to Duke like he did, and that's fine. That makes sense.
Yeah, some of our friends went to Duke.
Both of his kids... Yeah, Jan Agur Fjordtjof's son went to Duke as well.
Yeah.
Both of his kids played basketball at Duke too, which really surprised me. That's not an easy... Because Duke's like the best college
basketball. They made the first team at Duke.
It's not somebody you normally associate with, like, you know.
True.
It's a bit special to do
it
that.
It is a bit special.
Anyway, so can I just tell you who's in this consortium?
This
guy's got a serious Rolodex, right? So you have Willow Bay, who may not be known the world over, but it's a big deal in the States. She's a former television announcer. She's now the dean, I think, of some journalism school somewhere. You have Eduardo Saverin, who, do you know who he is?
No, I don't. That was the only name. I was not sure.
So he was the Facebook founder. God, I'm blanking on his name now.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg, yeah. This was his business partner.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
So he's worth billions and billions. They fell out. Saverin did some weird thing where then he moved to Singapore or something, tried to give up his U.S. citizenship, maybe gave it up. I don't know. But he's still a dude who's sitting there bored on a big pile of money. One of the co-owners of the L.A. Dodgers, whose name is, and I'm not making this up, Peter Guber. He must have had a really fun time.
So he goes against Todd Beauty, of course.
But he goes against Todd Bowley, how awesome
is
that?
Are we friends? Are we not friends? Are we beating against each other?
Yeah.
And
Bob Iger, the former big boss of the Walt Disney Corporation, Walt Disney Company, who owns this network. I think it's sort of star power. I'm sorry, Ian. Lord Co, David Blaine. Step aside.
Step aside.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Louis van Gaal has revealed that treatment for his prostate cancer was successful, and it was a lot tougher than what many had thought. I can't imagine how he managed to keep all of this hidden from almost everyone.
Incredible. I mean, huge love and strength and credit to Van Gaal, who said, I think he had 25 chemotherapy sessions. You can just imagine the toll that must have been on him. And yet, kept his job, didn't want to say anything. Now, he said that it's clear, well, for now at least, which we're all very happy. And really wish him the best, because that must have been a pretty old.
I'll tell you what, Louis, and I say this at the bottom of my heart, some people like you, some people don't like you, but you are one tough SOB.
I was mean with you before, when you deserved it. But no, this is incredible. Inter's game in hand, Gab, against Bologna has been rescheduled for April 27th. Why did it take so long?
Well, what's my answer to everything bad that happens in the history of the world?
Lawyers! Red tape and lawyers.
Lawyers! So this game was I think it was back in January.
Yeah.
Bologna had a COVID outbreak, and so the game was postponed. Now Inter had actually traveled to Bologna, did that thing where they walk onto the pitch. So they say, "Oh, look, you're not here. Forfeit the game." Inter should have just left and say, "Let's just replay it." But no, lawyers. Oh, look, Inter. Look, why don't you file a billion appeals, because maybe you'll get some idiot court to go and say, you deserve the automatic 3 points without playing the game. I don't think this is a good look. I don't think Inter should have listened to these lawyers. Look, at the time they're going to say, well, but we had the Coppa Italia, we're still the Champions League at the time, that's why we did these endless appeals. Now, this is stupid. Play the game. Decide things on the pitch. I'm happy that they have to play this. If they win it, it's absolutely huge for them, because they go top of Serie A. Northern Ireland manager Kenny Shields has apologized for suggesting that women are more emotional. This is after he was asked why his team conceded goals in succession.
Kenny.
During a 5-0 defeat to England. Jules, your thoughts?
Can we sack him? Can he get sacked, Kenny? I mean, I don't understand how you can come up with so much stupidity when you're in that kind of position, when you... this is part of the problem. And as long as people like him, and you thought, okay, the guy should know, he's the head coach of their women's team, but clearly he doesn't. Clearly he doesn't understand what this is all about. And I just think I've got no time for people like him who come up with those stupid things. I'm sorry.
This is ugly. I'm glad he apologized for it. I think it's the least that he could do. Yeah. He's been coached. I looked him up on Wikipedia because obviously I had no idea who Kenny Shields was. He's been coaching the Northern Ireland women's team since 2019. So he's been around it. I'm hoping he realizes. Yeah, well, he must realize. He apologized. I'm hoping it's a genuine apology. And he realizes the damage that stuff like this does. And, you know, at least he recognized it. At least we're talking about it. It's not lingering in the air.
UEFA have dismissed the appeal from Bodø/Glimt manager Kjetil Knutsen. And he won't be on the bench in a few hours on Thursday night when they take on Roma in the second leg of their quarterfinals Europa Conference League. Gab, this was after his role in a brawl in the first leg in the tunnel after they beat Mourinho's Roma 2-1.
Yeah, so because this happens on Thursday night and we tape Thursday morning, I don't normally pay much attention to this, but because it's Mourinho and it's Bodø/Glimt and it's the second time that, of course, they've beaten Roma, I thought this was quite extraordinary. This is a full-on brawl. It did not involve Mourinho, by the way. Mourinho apparently was the peacemaker. This is good Mourinho that we're seeing, by the way. He's one of his assistants. There was some argument that he was punched. Somebody threw a punch and there was a ban. People say there was video. One newspaper here in England said, like, oh, look, I don't know if you saw this. It said, like, video of what happened. And it's not. It's a video of a door. It is a glass door, but it has, like, this big thing in it. You can't tell what happened behind it. My take is, you know, suspending somebody from being at the game. He's still in contact with his players. But what I would love to know is, Kjetil Knutsen, this is what you should do, Kjetil. If you're watching this before the game tonight, get one of those big laundry baskets, the one with wheels underneath.
Idea.
Crawl inside, right, and have somebody wheel you into the Bodø/Glimt.
That's a great idea. That'd be cool. I wonder where that come from.
I wonder who first thought of that. Jules, we have our CONCACAF Champions League finalists. You put this in the quick hits, so I'm expecting you to have sorted up on this.
This is good.
Pumas beat Cruz Azul, and the Seattle Sounders knocked out New York City FC.
Yeah, so we've got a final between MLS and Liga MX, which I think is great. You know, it's another chapter in the rivalry between American football and Mexican football, which I think is always good, as long as, you know, it doesn't go crazy. And
the legend of Nicolas Lodeiro only grows.
Oh, of course, yeah. And we saw New York City, of course, you know, winning MLS last season. And now it's when I expected them to qualify for the final. No, it's Seattle. So I think we have a cracking game on our hands. That's going
to
be cool.
I will say this, and this is my appeal to broadcasters out there, including FIFA, thanks to FIFA Plus. I'm assuming this game is not going to be on my television.
Here in England? I don't know. It's a good question. So, I think Sky, who obviously have MLS rights, might be able to.
Sky, if you can do it. If not, CONCACAF. Do we know anybody at CONCACAF? I don't know. Why not stream this game outside?
On YouTube or somewhere.
You should do this. Everybody should do this. Any territory where you don't sell the rights.
Yeah, I agree.
And if they don't sell the rights where we live, make it available. Yep. Team up with your friends at FIFA. Put it on FIFA Plus. Start a CONCACAF Plus channel. I don't care. There's people with cameras. There's announcers. They are filming this game. It doesn't cost you that much more money, or really any more money, than stream it somewhere.
And the people would be interested and people would watch, for sure.
Yeah, and Jules and I would even talk about the final show. If we can see it.
Yeah, if we can see it. Fernandinho has decided not to extend his stay at Manchester City and is likely to return to Brazil after 9 seasons at the club. Gabi turns 37 next month, and as we saw when he came on against Atleti, he can still do a job.
Yeah, it was funny here because, like, Pep said, wait, did he say he's not coming back? Because Fernandinho was like, oh, I don't think so. My family, Brazil. Dude, he turns 37 in May. Time to move on, right? He's decided that. You're happy for him. I don't know if he's going to keep playing. I think he probably could do a job somewhere for a while longer.
So, definitely.
He's been a phenomenal servant to the club. What's amazing about Fernandinho is I was shocked that it was 9 years, because he didn't just have a career before that. He had a long career before that. Shakhtar Donetsk. He was like, you know, he was huge.
He was amazing there.
He was huge.
You know, I saw it. Funny that this has happened, because on Sunday before the game, so the two teams warm up, and then you always have a second goal on the side to warm up, so you don't hit and you don't practice in the main goal.
Right.
That's only for your goalkeeper. But if you want to have shots and etc. often you have another goal. And the City players were on my side, on a pitch side, and that's what they were doing. So you had Bernardo and De Bruyne and whoever they want, Gabriel Jesus, all of that. And who was laying the ball to them was Fernandinho, like if he was already an assistant coach. And I really thought, seeing them doing that, I was like, okay, maybe then that's next for him. He's going to be part of Pep's technical staff and be and do his badges and everything like others. So I was a bit surprised because he looked so happy to be there and be a coach almost for that team.
And I'll tell you what, he doesn't speak very often, at least not in English, and so people don't always realize this. But I'm told by people who know him, wow, he is one of the smartest, most intelligent
I'm not surprised.
In the Premier League.
I'm not surprised. Really, really good guy.
FIFA have introduced their own streaming service, imaginatively called FIFA Plus. I wonder where they got that idea, Jules. But look, they're going to have every single game from their archive, past World Cups, 2,000-plus games, documentaries, original documentaries. And also, I think FIFA games in like different regions for which they don't sell the rights. And it's all free.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, I'm a bit surprised. It's a quiet week in terms of quickies. We're not going to lie. But I'm happy because...
Can we tell people our producer, Freddie, told us to
really
put this in?
He put this in. And I guess you and I have done a lot of those FIFA documentaries where you talk about the greatest goals in World Cup history and you talk about this and you talk about that. So it's for people to watch more of our shows even. No, more seriously, I think it's great. I think it's great because the one thing we should never forget, and we teach our kids... To never forget about the past, the heritage, what happened before, the greatest players.
I also think, like, you know, people are going to say this, like, oh, how's it going to compete with Amazon, ESPN Plus, blah, blah, blah. Is this appeal? You guys, FIFA also have a public service thing. There's 211 nations in FIFA.
Exactly.
I don't know how much these other streaming services, the commercial ones, are available in other parts of the world. I don't know how easy it is to watch them. I don't know. You know, I think this is, for once, a positive thing.
Yeah, I agree. I will subscribe for sure. And I know you will too. Gab, let's end on a sad note, though, because former Colombia captain Freddie Rincon has died early this morning on Thursday after suffering severe injuries due to a car accident.
Yeah, look, it's a sad story whenever somebody passes, especially in such a tragic, sudden way. I remember Rincon scoring a great goal in the 1990 World Cup. He's one of those guys who came to Europe. He came to Parma first. He had a stint at Real Madrid.
Yeah, Napoli, I think.
He had a year in Napoli. And he was kind of like this tall guy who was also athletic and skillful, cutting in from the side. But then he really had his best years back in Brazil at Corinthians. Just European football didn't quite suit him, but a class act. And, of course, he was a part of those legendary Colombian teams with Carlos Valderrama, the ones who were undefeated heading into the 94 World Cup.
And he scored in that 5-0 win against Argentina. Remember in those World Cup 94 qualifiers, the incredible 5-0 win?
So Freddie Rincon.
He was 55, so yeah.
Bit special. Right, Jules, we're going to come back on Monday because we have another Manchester City-Liverpool game to talk through, as well as the FA Cup semi-finals. Plenty going on all around Europe. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.